Dave Moore on Today FM podcast.
Russell Crowe, how are you, sir?
Good, man. How you doing?
Very good. Where do I find you? Where are you in the world? What's over your shoulder there?
Roma.
Wow.
So this is the top of Trinity del Monte. In the background there is St. Peter's, you know, the Pope's pad.
Fantastic.
Over there is the Pantheon. And just to show that we're not as professional as we look, that's a ring light.
Coming through. I thought it was some alien invasion or something.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's Jesus. Jesus is down there.
You are some kind of, aren't you an eternal ambassador for Rome or something like that?
Ambasciatore di Roma nel mondo, the ambassador for Rome in the world.
Wow. That's an incredible achievement and an honor. Listen, I should say, because you're talking to me now, welcome to Ireland, even though you're currently in Italy. But this is the Irish part of your chats about your show. And I'm really, really excited that you're coming back. What, Ireland loves you. And I think you love Ireland, too. What is it about this place that touches you, do you think?
Man, I mean, that's a really, really long answer. But it probably centers in something as very simple as the intensity of a conversation. I find I have Irish friends who on the surface don't appear to be the type of person who would be well-read or fully versed in politics. And you scratch the surface and it's like, that's amazing. This person reads books regularly. They take in what's going on in the world and they have a viewpoint and an opinion, you know, and not just for politics of home, but for the way things resonate in other places, you know. Specifically, I found, you know, in the kind of politics of humanity in terms of, you know, what an indigenous culture really means, how an indigenous culture, you know, holds on to its cultural values and but yet still grows, you know. So I love being in Ireland because you can just have some seriously intense conversations, you know, and not always necessarily, you know, do you agree with each other?
Sure, yeah, yeah. And you can hold them over a pint usually somewhere, which is also good fun.
That's right, you know, and you have the facility to disagree and still enjoy each other's company and learn things, you know.
There you go. And do you have a favorite, like, place or favorite memory of Ireland or somewhere that really kind of speaks to you? Because I know my listeners will love to hear that.
Well, this is going to probably sound so mundane, but, you know, a sunny day outside of Dublin, riding my bicycle to work in Bray and going along the seafront and then, like, you know, girding my loins because I know that now that I've come down here, I've got to go uphill to get to the studio. Yeah. You know, and, you know, it's just that, you know, I was just... It can be so magical, that coastline. But, you know, I've had some other experiences too, you know, in Limerick, down in Kilkee, Galway, you know, the cliffs on the west coast, just sure. Absolutely magical. But, you know, I've barely dipped a toe in, and it's funny to say that because I've been there 7 or 8 times, and the last time I was there for 3 months. But as you would well know, you know, 10 or 20 miles can make a huge difference in places.
Absolutely. In fact, you mentioned the cliffs. I'm only bringing my kids, who are now aged 9 to 14, there's 4 of them, but I'm only bringing them to the cliffs of Moher, the west coast of Ireland. You know, this summer is the first time they're going to see those cliffs. And they've, well, one of them's lived here for 14 years and he hasn't seen them yet, you know?
Amazing, man. Amazing. Yeah. And I went, the first time I went was the windiest, ugliest day, you know,
terrifying.
And the majesty of those cliffs, you know, and I've grown up in a country that's got a fair amount of cliffs and harbor headlands and what have you, but the majesty of those cliffs and the way the wind was coming up the face of the cliff and almost like sort of like trying to claw you into
over,
the ocean.
Yeah.
Like, oi.
It was an amazing.
My mate who actually got knocked off his feet by the wind.
It is something else up there. And there's an amazing documentary actually called Between Land and Sea, which is about the surfers of the big waves out around the cliffs of Moher. And if you get a chance, I highly recommend you watch that. It'll give you an even bigger appreciation of the majesty of that area. Listen, there's something very majestic in Dublin, which is the Gaiety Theatre, which is where you are going to bring your, I won't say band, I'll say your collective indoor garden party. And we cannot wait, July 1st.
July 1st, yeah. I mean, I haven't been to the Gaiety Theatre, but when we were talking about venues, one particular person started sending me photos of the inside of the theatre, and I just fell in love with it, man. It's just gorgeous. What a beautiful spot to do a show. So I'm really looking forward to that.
When I think about this, as I said, I don't want to call them a band, but I think about this, the way you do this musical evening is like, you know, there isn't a defined lineup. There isn't necessarily a lead singer. It's a collective, right? It's like everything changes, it meanders through the show, and it's so exciting.
Well, the umbrella of indoor garden party can cover a lot of different things, but it usually is basically centered on what I'm working on musically at the time. Mm. And at the moment, most of the show is going to be centered around myself and a band called the Gentleman Barbers and the work that we've been doing in the last 4 or 5 years. But it also in Dublin is going to include Lorraine O'Reilly, who's become kind of a staple for us when we do shows. She's really just a member of the band now. And but also a special guest opening the show is going to be Janet Devlin. So there's a fair Irish quality to the show.
Amazing. And it's a little bit bittersweet to speak to you today. And I'll explain why. Because my dad passed away in 2020, but he and I in our adulthood connected with music. He's the reason I have such a huge passion for music, and I love music and listen to his old vinyl records and the Sunday mornings in the 80s was how we bonded growing up. But as adults, he would find records because, look, I'm a thrash metal lover. You know, I love that kind of stuff. And he was in a different realm. But we would find places where we cross over. And he found the album The Musical by Under a Garden Party. And he said to me, he was like, you are going to love this. And, you know, every now and again, that will happen. And so I know he would just love that I'm talking to you today because it just meant so much to him, that record.
My old man passed in 2021, actually. So I feel your pain. It's just, that's a beautiful thing, man, that you've told me that story. That's fantastic. Well, good on your old man.
Right? Yeah, yeah. A man of exquisite taste. He loved, actually, you know what? Midnight was his favorite song on that record. It's mine, too, as a result of him constantly just extolling its virtues.
It's a very slim genre. It's a love song for married people with children.
Well, we both were, I guess. So that's probably why. As I said, I'm a big metal fan. I'm also a guitar collector. And I love when I get someone on who's a guitar nut. And I believe you are. And I know you did an auction recently and sold a fair few. But I just wonder, sometimes I like to compare collection sizes so that I can tell my wife that I'm not that crazy. So, Russell Crowe, how many guitars do you own?
Well, I sold 25.
Wow.
Which brought my collection back a fair bit. But just like, you know, I sold a bunch of watches too. Mm. And my watch collection is now twice as large as it was before I sold those watches. Selling, yeah. And my guitar collection has somehow managed to thicken itself out again. But now it's full of sort of newer acoustic guitars. You know, I've got some Loudons now.
Yeah, and, great, you know, brands. Jesus.
Some Martin orchestral models. But yeah, you are probably pretty safe to say it's around about 72 or 74.
Well, then I've got maybe 6 or 8 more than Russell Crowe, and that's a problem.
There you go. That's a problem. Sorry, mate. I thought I was giving you a good pass.
Well, in fact, I've started selling recently, but you know, I've managed to shift 6 in the last 6 months. I'm proud of myself, but yeah, it just keeps growing. Like you said, what can you do?
Well, the thing is, though, and you probably feel the same way, is like, you know, regardless of whether you buy something that's highly collectible and desirable to other people and stuff like that, I don't buy a guitar or a watch because I'm intending on selling it.
Yep. I couldn't agree more.
Even if I pick it up once a year, that you know, it's still fine.
Absolutely.
I'm still happy about that. Yeah. I've got this massive collection of Gretsches, man. I actually just recently started using this matte black Gretsch hot rod on stage.
Ooh. That's
just so sexy. It's such a sexy guitar.
will that make an appearance on July 1st?
Oh, probably, because that's my guitar tech out of all my guitars. He's like, this is the one.
This is the one. Guitar techs, no.
Well, you know, the sound that I want, you know, for particular tracks that I play it on, he's like, bang, that's the one.
That's the one.
And it's a funny thing that happens. I reach for that guitar, and it always gets a response from the audience.
Yeah.
You know, no, it's not about my guitar playing. It's about the look of the guitar.
I totally understand that. I have guitars that far exceed my ability as well, so it makes perfect sense. In fact, I just realized, and this is honest to God, this is a complete coincidence. I'm wearing a T-shirt, which I just spotted in the video of this. It's Ormsby Guitars, which is a company in Perth. And they make these incredible electric guitars. And I was only over there last year at the Women's World Cup, and I took a trip out to the factory to meet Perry Ormsby, who's the guy behind the company. And just as another Australian company to mention there, but they are just, they're incredible.
As a little thing with me recently, right, during COVID, I did the lockdowns up on my farm, right?
Yeah.
Had an alternative there where I could either be in the city with my boys or I could be on the farm with my parents.
Hmm.
And, you know, my boys were fine and dandy with being with mom and stuff like that. But my parents were going to find the lockdown quite difficult because all of their schedules had to change. They couldn't do the things. And that was a bit harsh on my dad because he had, you know, a lot of early onset this and that, you know.
Okay.
So
yep.
I decided to go to the farm. And through that period where everybody's employment sort of was changed and adjusted, I met this guy, Tim, and he came to work at the farm to do, initially to relay a paved driveway and then to do some fencing. And then he did some woodwork around the house. And I was like, you know, he redid these doors for my mum and they were gorgeous, you know? And I was just talking to him about how I appreciate his workmanship and all that sort of stuff. And just over a pint of Guinness, actually, one night, he said, well, you know, I used to make guitars.
Oh.
What do you mean you used to make guitars? He goes, well, I stopped because people don't really appreciate the time and effort a guitar takes. I said, man, I'd love to, you know, play one of your guitars. And he brought one in, and it was like unbelievable.
Really?
So it took me about a year. But I convinced him just through my belief and enthusiasm, you know?
Yeah.
What would it take for me, you know, to get you to build a guitar? So anyway, we made a deal where over a number of years he would make me 12.
Wow.
About 7 in now. Ed Sheeran has one. They're just beautiful, these incredible O'Day guitars.
I was going to say, what's his name? Yeah, O'Day.
Tim O'Day is rare as rare as rare, you know? But it's so beautiful. And I would say, you know, no disrespect to George Loudon at all, but sure, it's a competitive instrument to a Loudon.
Wow.
You know, such care and attention and such acoustic resonance, you know. And we've been playing around with different woods. So Ed Sheeran's one is made completely from Australian wood.
Amazing.
There's a burl around the sound hole that's made from Coolabah.
Oh, yeah.
Which is mentioned in Waltzing Matilda, yeah, you know, under the shade of a Coolabah tree.
Coolabah tree, yeah.
Which we thought was pretty cool. We just recently made one completely out of red cedar.
Wow.
And it's such a shocking guitar. I mean, it's like you open the guitar case and it goes,
it just speaks. You know,
it looks,
yeah,
it's like the red cedar wood is almost like tiger stripes, you know?
Oh, incredible.
So, yeah, we're about 7 guitars in. And he actually recently came over and we're having a pint together and just a little catch up chat. And he just said that I'd really sort of restore his faith in
people believing in guitars. Yeah.
Because he loves to do it. He loves to do it and he loves to care about it. And yeah, they're expensive instruments, but
sure,
you know, I'm finding, you know, one by one homes for people, whether they're gifts or you know, they want to get one off me or whatever. So,
amazing.
Yeah, we got another 5 to go, and we'll keep exploring the different woods and stuff we can use.
Well, hopefully O'Day will continue and beyond the 12. That'll be incredible. But look, I have to ask you about 2 of your other passions, acting and sport. Let's go to acting first, because I wonder, are there many parallels between music and acting? For you, I mean, like, or is it different that the immediacy of a live performance doesn't come with the elongated, protracted process of making a movie? Or do you find similarities in them?
Well, the preparation's always the same. Mm. You know, the preparation's always about attention to detail and working through the things that you need to know and understand. Like, so at the moment, I'm playing Hermann Göring in a movie called Nuremberg.
That's right, yeah.
With Rami Malek and Michael Shannon. And, you know, that was months and months of just reading and watching things and, you know, German language classes and dialect classes and stuff. And, you know, I'm finding that the role, I mean, we're really having, it's a great shoot, but it's difficult to carry that stuff around. You know, it's difficult to carry around the idea that you can try and find redemption in a fellow
in
like that, you know,
that, yeah.
Because there are very few redeeming qualities. But when, you know, you start scratching beneath the surface and you realize that, you know, in World War One, he was a flying ace with 22 kills, you know, and you can see that at the beginning of his journey with National Socialism, he was genuinely trying to find an alternative for his countrymen, you know, because Germany of the 1920s and early 1930s, so deeply affected by the Treaty of Versailles, you know, it must have been a very harsh place. So, but, you know, it's been quite a few months now that I've been carrying it around. I've got about 8 shooting days left.
Right.
And I am starting to get to that point where I really want to see Herman in the rearview mirror.
Yes.
But there are crossover similarities in the preparation for both things. But as you say, you're on a film set and normally what you do, you know, it's not going to get seen for a year or a year and a half or whatever. And, you know, you tend to work in such heavily scheduled situations that, you know, one page can be shot on day one and, you know, the very next page can be shot on day 50. So
it's so different. Yeah. And actually, when you mentioned that there about that movie you're making at the moment, I've often wondered about actors. When you do something intense, so say like Unhinged, one of my favorite movies you've ever done, right? Just absolutely love that movie. But it's so intense. But I wonder, is the shoot, like, does the intensity of the subject matter creep into the shoot, or are you just, you know, you're serious and professional about everything, I get it, whether it's a rom-com or, you know, Unhinged. But does that intensity of like The Pope's Exorcist or this, what you're shooting now, do they kind of creep in to you and the set and everybody?
Sometimes. Perversely, on the set of Unhinged, we were having a ball. Because we were just laughing every day. Oh, what if he does this?
That's actually what it felt like. It's like, how much crazier could this get?
Yeah. I mean, we shot that in New Orleans, and we had, for example, 8 miles of lockdown freeway.
Wow.
So I did all of the driving stunts. You know, I've got some instances like 4 or 5 cameras actually attached to the vehicle that I'm driving.
Wow.
And I've got no speed limit. No cops are going to pull me up. Nobody's going to get me on a, you know, on the radar.
So the imagination runs wild, yeah.
Go for it. And, you know, I mean, obviously over time, I've done a lot of vehicle stuff in film. So there's a certain level of training. So the stunt guys and some of the stunt guys knew me from other things. So
sure.
they just trusted my ability to actually to do it, you know. But, you know, then you got something like The Pope's Exorcist. And at a certain point, you know, it will have, you know, when you're screaming out stuff in Latin and you're sort of like exercising, you know, demons from a child or what have you, it can have, you know, the effect of putting a pall across what everybody's doing, you know.
Yeah.
Just the same as it with Nuremberg, you know, we did a 17-page scene the other day, me and Michael Shannon, 2 people talking to each other for 17 pages, which is not something I've ever experienced on a feature film shoot before. It was Goering's cross-examination, you know. And as much as there's been other scenes where there's a sort of a lightness of touch, you know, we constructed that scene to kind of uncover the man within, you know. So it, you know, when you stop and, you know, everybody in the crew is listening to what's being said and they stop and they ponder the world and ponder what that stuff means. It's all very well to throw out, you know, facts and figures now, but when you look at it in terms of the real cost of human life, what have you, it definitely can put you a bit of a melancholy on the day.
I can understand. Yeah, yeah. And listen, speaking of acting, Irish actors obviously enjoying a moment in the sun, Cillian winning the Oscar, Barry Keoghan doing so well. Paul Mescal, don't worry, I'm not going to ask you 1,000 questions about Gladiator 2 that you've got nothing to do with.
I don't know anything about it.
Exactly. But there does seem to be a kind of...
Maximus is 6 foot under somewhere in the Coliseum.
Yeah, exactly. But there does seem to be a kind of a golden moment for some of the Irish actors. Do you know any of the lads? I mean, have you met any of them before?
Well, I know this sounds very convenient, but when I first met Cillian, when he just first arrived in Los Angeles. So it was off the back of like a couple of English or Irish independent
That's right,
films.
yeah.
And I had a moment to just shake his hand and tell him how much I love what he was doing. But, you know, that's probably 15 or more years ago.
Yeah.
And it's taken him, you know, quite some time to get the traction and then build himself up into a place where he's now, you know, toast of the town and everybody's first choice, which is fantastic. But it's his, you know, his own commitment and resilience that's got him to that point, you
So
know.
true.
But yeah, I mean, I did have that moment, and I just knew he was special, man. So I sort of just reached out and shook his hand and,
Very
you know,
cool.
wished him the best of luck. You know, from my point of view, when I started having kids, I really stopped going into Los Angeles and worrying about any of that stuff, you know. I mean, I actually haven't, as I'm talking to you now, I haven't been to America in 5 years.
Right, yeah.
But it doesn't affect the amount of work that I do. You
No.
know, I don't really need to go in and shake hands and stuff like that anymore, because most of these studio heads or producers or whatever I've connected to sometime in the past.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's not that I don't, you know, want to go there, but, you know, the schedule just hasn't put it up. I've spent most of the time in Europe the past 5 years, but I also worked in Thailand for the first time and shot in Malta again for the first time in 20 years. And I've been bouncing around a bit and enjoying myself, you know,
Well, we're glad
but,
to have you in Europe.
yeah, well, it's been good.
Well, listen, let's go to sport very quickly. I know I have to wrap up. I don't want to take too much of your time, but like I know your rugby team, the Rabbitohs, are just starting the season now. How involved are you in that? Or is it just an ownership thing, or are you on the ground making decisions for the company, I guess?
Well, when we first started, it was very time consuming, and it probably was, you know, apart from my day job and my night job, I had this other job that I was spending 40 hours or more a week on. You know, but we have different systems in place now, and we have a very strong board. And, you know, you learn over time to simply hire the person that's going to do the job the best way, you know, so you don't have to be around. But having said that, we've had quite a poor start to this season. I think it's the worst start to a season that we've had in 14 years, and
Oh,
that's basically
no.
my entire time
Yeah.
as the custodian of the club. So, you know, but the thing is, we have the personnel there. It's just that sometimes the bounce of the ball just doesn't go your way.
That's fair.
So we'll see. It's a very challenging time for the squad and for the coaching staff, and we'll see how they respond to it, you know.
Yeah, you're a big Leeds fan. I'm a Manchester United fan, so maybe our friendship ends here, Russell. Listen, do you think Leeds have what it takes to come up and stay up? Because even as a United fan, I'm supposed to obviously dislike you intensely, but like, you know, I think the Leeds United rivalry is a real rivalry. I love when there's rivalries like that in the Premier League. So, do they have what it takes?
Look, they've had a very good season this year, you know. And you may or may not know this because I did let it slip on in an interview a while ago. I have a tiny, tiny piece of Leeds now.
Oh, yeah.
They came and asked, because, you know, it was a few years ago, 10 years ago or more, I suggested that it was the sleeping giant of English soccer. And, Italian family came in and bought it, and then they did a deal with the family that owns the San Francisco 49ers. So I've gone into that situation as part of that extended 49ers family trust, you know. And they're serious people. They know how to run an operation. And even with the simple changes that they've made now, it's pretty much, you know, a similar squad. They're getting very different results,
Great
you
results,
know.
yeah.
So that's going well. I don't want to jinx that by talking about it too much, but I think now that that there's like a, you know, not I'm not going to say the word proper, but it's kind of like there's just a different attitude with how the team is being approached now, and their ideas are very forward thinking, and it's about, you know, practical things like increasing the amount of seats in the stadium,
Yeah.
therefore increasing the amount of annual memberships and you know, tickets sold, and therefore that gives you a higher budget when you're dealing with players. So all of their ideas are resonant in that way. You know, a simple idea means something big over here.
Over here, yeah. Well, it's mirroring Manchester United's scenario now, where Sir Jim Ratcliffe has come in and he's, as you said, putting the proper people in proper places to make proper decisions, and hopefully that'll see a change in our fortunes as well. Listen, before we go, I've got to do a quick fire round of questions, which I do with all my guests. So if you've got 2 seconds, let's do this, right? Number one, what are you currently obsessed with? From the benefit of my radio listeners, he's just pulled his wrist up to the camera and shown me an absolutely incredible timepiece. What is that?
That's a Patek Philippe 5811.
Oh, some of my friends are currently falling down.
That's 3 years of my life waiting for this to turn up.
I've heard. Yeah. I've heard.
All the Nautilus.
Right, Nautilus. Because, yeah.
I mean, it's such an unusual thing, but this band was designed, or the watch was designed, by a guy called Gerald Genter. And Gerald Genter, in the history of watchmaking, he's responsible for some amazing moments like the AP Royal Oak, the Cartier Pasha, you know, and this particular band, he absolutely has perfected the male bracelet for a watch.
This is so gorgeous.
Smooth.
Yeah.
And it just sits on your wrist. Look at this thing.
That is honestly, I know it's this radio, but it is stunning. who's the most famous person in Russell Crowe's phone?
I got prime ministers and presidents and stuff.
You got them all, yeah.
But man, you got to understand, I've been around a long time.
That's true.
People watch movies, you know. Mm. Occasionally, I'll get a call from Bill Clinton, who's just been somewhere and he's watched a movie and like, I just wanted to talk to you about that film. You know, but you know, there's a lot of people, you know, I've got some really very famous buddies as well that, you know, that you like to catch up with if you're in the right side of the world.
Yeah, I've no doubt. Think back to when you were about 8 years old, you were in school. Did you bring a lunchbox to school? And if you did, what was in it?
Well, I used to hate eating the sandwiches my mum made for me for lunch. Used to absolutely hate, because that, you know, she would wrap them in Glad wrap.
Yeah.
You know, which is like, I don't know, that's a brand name.
Cling film. Yeah, yeah.
Cling film. So by the time you get to lunchtime, it's just this soggy, wet mess.
Sweaty, you know? Yeah.
I used to just like ignore the lunches in my bag. However, at one point in time, because my dad used to run pubs, you see, for other people. You know? And we had this one particular pub. It was called the Occidental. It was in Sydney and York Street. So we lived for a part of my childhood right in the middle of the city.
Amazing.
And we had this cook called Maria. Maria could make a lunch, man.
Okay. You know what I mean? What was on the menu?
I switched, you know, completely from like rejecting the idea. It was just, it wasn't that it was anything sort of super special.
Yeah.
But she would take a bread roll, a little bit of ham, some mozzarella, because she had an Italian attitude.
Okay.
And then she would wrap it in greaseproof paper.
Oh, that makes the difference. Yeah.
So you open it 3 or 4 hours later, and it's like the moment you just made it.
That's perfect.
And my mother would actually say, why is it that you never used to eat my lunches, but you're eating Maria's? It's like, Mum, Let's just not go into the details. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Leave it be. And look, the final question I ask all my guests, and in fact, a lot of my listeners reckon that I would chicken out of asking Russell Crowe this question, but I won't. I'm going to ask you. Do you wash your legs in the shower? Because I don't. Well,
my legs in the shower. If I've had a big day playing tennis or going to the gym or something, I will. But, you know, I do tend to have a very masculine attitude towards the shower in that, you know, it's 2 to 3 minutes and I'm out the door.
Couldn't agree more.
You know, it drives my girlfriend a bit nuts, but, well, you know, it takes her an hour and a half.
I was going to say, but my attitude there is, look, I'm freeing it up for you. You know, once I'm gone out of the way after 3 minutes, it's all yours.
That's right. Like the generosity.
Yeah. Well, look, I can't wait for you to come to Dublin to perform at the Gaiety Theatre on July 1st, Indoor Garden Party. Everybody needs to get these tickets. I will definitely be there enjoying the music and especially remembering my dad's love for you as well. So thank you for chatting with me today, Russell. Can't wait to see you in July.
Cheers, man. It's been a great chat. Thank you very much.
Really appreciate it. Thanks a million.
All the best.
Dave Moore on Today FM Podcast.